Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Let's take a look, this week I want to take a look at the character of Eliezer, the Eved Avraham, the servant of Avraham. There's a lot that the Midrashim have to say, some fairly interesting aspects of his character, his personality, and the role that he plays in these stories. So let's start with the following Medrash from Bereishis Rabbah at the top of the page, just to get us started. It says the Medrash as follows, quoting a pasuk in Mishlei of Eved Maskil, Yimshol Beven Mevish, that an intelligent servant will rule over a shameful son. Now this is a pasuk in Mishlei, nothing to do with Eliezer in Pshat. Shlomo Melech and Mishlei is saying various different statements of wisdom, and one of them is that an intelligent servant will be better than a shameful son. That even though the son should be in the position of power to inherit the father, but an intelligent servant will rule over him and will share the inheritance among the brothers. So the Medrash Darshans, who is the Evan Maskil that Shlomo HaMelech is referring to? Who is the intelligent servant? Ze Eliezer. It's a reference to Eliezer. Evan Avram is the intelligent servant. Uma Haskalah. So what was so intelligent about Eliezer? What did he do that was so smart? Says the Medrash, Omar, he said to himself, Kvar kiloso shel oso ha'ish biyado. The curse of that person is still in his hand. Referring to Canaan, if you remember the story when Noah comes out of the Teva right after the flood, and he gets drunk, and his three sons are involved in the episode, and his son Canaan, who saw the shame of his father,
and his grandson.
Canaan was his grandson, excuse me, thank you, came and told his father, Ham, who came, and instead of, that was very impressive. And instead of Ham covering
it.
Get another bowl of chowna for this guy, please. Instead of covering up his father's shame, so Ham went ahead and, you know, continued it basically, and tells shame and Yefes. And so when Noah awakens from his slumber, he curses Ham. And in Eved La'avodin, he says, "You'll be a slave to slaves," he says to Ham. So Eliezer is descended from Ham, from Canaan. That's the line that he's from. So Eliezer says to himself, "I am cursed to be destined to be a slave. That's simply the lot in life that I have." Shema yavo kushi echod or barbar echod. Maybe a kushi or a barbar, some, you know, nomadic tribe type of person is going to come, umishtabidi, and he'll take over. He'll will subjugate me to have to work for him. Since I'm destined to be a slave, maybe it's going to be to some random behemoth of a guy. So let him become a slave to Avram. Let him be a slave anyway. So he's an Evan Maskil, says the Medrash. So the Medrash starts, we'll discuss. So there's an insight, an intelligent slave of Eliezer who decided, since he's going to be a slave anyway, at least let me be a slave to Avram. Now, within this choice that Eliezer makes, he seems to be extremely successful in attaching himself to Avraham and becoming a slave in that regard. And here's where I want to point out that Chazal have very different perspectives on Eliezer, who made this wise decision to say, let me at least be a slave to Avraham. So take a look at number two and three, which will be one approach, and then we'll talk about some of the others, which you're familiar with from Rashi. Says the Medrash in number two, Vayom Avram al Avdo Zaken Beso. So Avram in the story says to Eliezer, who's defined as Zaken Beso, the elder of his house, and the Medrash Darshan Shayaziv Ikunun Shelo Daimelo, the physical appearance, the radiance of his face of Eliezer was the same as Avram. He became a slave to Avram, and not only was he a slave to Avram, he actually sort of took on the characteristics, the appearance, the nature of Avram, that if you actually looked at Eliezer, it almost appeared as if you were looking at Avram. Hamoishel b'chol asher lo. The pasuk says that Eliezer was in charge of everything that Avraham had. So the Medrash says, what does that mean that he was in charge of everything that he had? Not just that he ran his household, but he was a moshel. Moshel means someone who rules. In the same way that Avram was a moshel b'yitzro, Avram ruled over his inclination, his yitzro hara. Eliezer, growing up, living, becoming a servant to Avram in Avram's house, not only did he take on his appearance, his spiritual essence, he was defined as a Moshe, one who ruled over himself in the same way that Avram did. The Gemara Numa, when it talks about this concept, says even further. Gemara has an interesting pasuk at the end there, number 3. That miyameim shel avosim, from the days of our fathers, there's never been a break from yeshiva. They always were learning in yeshiva, the Gemara says, the avos. And the Gemara darshins the language of zakein, that Avram was referred to as a zakein. He was a yoshev bi yeshiva. He was an older, literally meaning a wise man, who would learn in yeshiva. Eliezer Eved Avram was a zakein bi yoshev bi yeshiva. And then the Gemara darshins about Eliezer, the same pasuk that the previous Medrash darshins, what does it mean? Hamoshel b'chol ha-shelo, that he ruled over everything. That he was Moshel b'Torah.
Does it mean yeshiva literally, or like in the state of...
like a state of learning?
Yeah.
It seems like as Yaakov was an Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim, that's right. Like the concept of learning in yeshiva, of having a study house where you would sit and learn. From the times of Avram, the Gemara Darshans, each one of them had like a yeshiva.
What was yeshiva Shem Rebbe? That was a place that...
Yeah.
It was in existence going back to...
I guess back to Shemi Weber, I would... yeah, it seems that way.
There was a yeshiva to go to.
It seems that, in other words, you're asking a question, which is a fair question, which I don't have a great answer. I don't know what the real answer is. I can tell you the way that Chazal talk about it in the Midrashim, Yaakov went to the yeshiva Shem Ve'ever. Rivka, when she's not sure what's going on, Vayisrotzitzu Habanim Bekirba, this pregnancy, this weird pregnancy, she goes to ask in the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'ever. So they talk about it like it was an actual Beis Medrash. I don't know, when learning Midrashim, I don't know what that exactly means, but I can tell you that they do speak about it like it was a place of building funds. I'm sure there were dues that had to support the institution like any other yeshiva.
Buildings were like
cheap. Sure, building for yeshiva.
Right. There's, a few palm fronds. Good to go.
They say it was a property tax.
I just want to say there was never a break when Avraham finally started and Yaakov was in the Lot's house. There was a break in learning.
Right. So you have this, another, so it seems like there's the concept of whether or not there was a physical yeshiva or whether or not he was learning while he was only a shepherd.
We always had like in mind.
Right, now the Gemara's, the Mefarshim speak about why the Avos were shepherds, because a shepherd was a profession which allowed you to sit and think all day long. So it didn't require the physical toil of building stuff. You'd be out there in the fields and you'd be... Yeah, you'd be working on things.
Really?
In other words,
occupying movement.
Right, that's where it began. So they would argue.
Think now.
Right.
That was like any man of the day, the shepherd kind of.
It was a non-skilled labor. In other words, being a shepherd, but in the times of the Gemara already, being a shepherd was a very looked down upon profession. You were assumed to be a thief if you were a shepherd, that you would allow your cattle to graze in other people. It was assumed you were not trustworthy to testify in a court of law if you were a shepherd.
That's
yeah. Yeah, I read about the times of the Gemara being
up by
right, so saying they talk about the Avos.
Back
then, in the sense that David HaMelech was a shepherd. In other words, it wasn't something that you were like proud of in the sense of like it wasn't skilled labor, but it was one for a philosopher or one who wanted to sit and learn and work on himself. That's what they would do.
So back then,
wasn't anything probably.
It would allow the Avos were shepherds because it allowed them to. Whatever it meant to learn in those days. They didn't have a Gemara, obviously, but...
Well, that's right.
They
didn't have tuition
at all.
I don't know. I'm just saying that they were shepherds because it allowed them that freedom. A person who's doing that, not because he's a philosopher, but because he doesn't have the skills to do anything else, it's a very low level... I mean, there's no skill involved.
At the time of Mitzrayim, when he said, our family... That was for different reasons. That was...
Right, because they worship sheep. They wanted to stay away from... The Egyptians wanted to stay away from that.
So maybe that was the beginning of the end for shepherds.
Maybe. Then again, so number 3 concludes in discussing the mind of the aspect of Eliezer, who was a wise, intelligent servant who chose to, anyway, if I have to be a slave, might as well be a slave to Avram. And then he becomes like Avram. He's a Moshel B'Yitzro. He rules over his inclination, like Avram did. His face takes the appearance of Avram. Which the Maharsha Shiva Rogovsky says, it doesn't mean like physically, it doesn't mean like his nose changed and his eyes. It means when you look at the word panim, which means face, also means inside. Same word for panim and bifnim are the same word because a person's face expresses what's going on inside. Both on a simple level in terms of the emotions, I can read what you're feeling by looking at your face. And on a much deeper level, I can know a lot about a person by looking at their face. There's certain, when you see a person of greatness, you say like, wow, you just see it on their face. Like, that person's a tzaddik.
Well, it also could be a level of let's say, just appearing mannerism-wise, all the mannerisms that he adopted, because let's say Avram was the epitome of midos and the chesed, he obviously had mannerisms that...
I'm sure that's also included within that. Another
like, let's say you have someone who's an impersonator. They'll impersonate somebody. Yeah, you're not going to go, wow, it looks exactly like him, but it bears that striking resemblance. Granted, they're not the same people, they don't look physically similar, but just able to adopt their mannerisms, give it that appearance.
So the mannerisms, yeah, the appearance, he gave off the same aura as Avram, and the Medrash concludes that he was a Moshel B'Toras Rabo. He ruled over the Torah of his Rebbe. He would, so to speak, draw from the well and give others to drink. Like, if you were around Eliezer, you would be lapping up the Torah of Avram, because Eliezer was such a trustworthy servant that he was just a complete and perfect conveyor of whatever it was that Avraham had to teach. Eliezer held it. He controlled it. He knew it. And he gave it to others. So when you look at the way that Chazal tells about Eliezer, you think, you know, he's a pretty good guy. He was it. He was the Moshel B'chol Beiso. He ruled over his house. He was in control of everything, spiritually, physically. He had that quality to him. And then we see, on the other hand, we have from last week's parsha at the Akedah, when Avram's on his way to Akedah's Yitzchak, he's commanded to give to offer up his son Yitzchak as a sacrifice. And the Torah describes that on the third day, and Avraham looks up and Vayar, and he saw a place in the distance, and he says to his two lads, he says, "You stay here." So the Gemara has a whole, the Medrash has a whole discussion as to what took place. Avram says, it appears, he says, he saw the cloud over Haramar. He said to himself, it seems like that's the place. So he says to the two lads that are with him, he says, "You guys see what I'm seeing?" And they say, "No, we don't see anything at all." He says, "Well, if you don't see anything at all, why don't you stay here with the Chamor? Stay here in Nishar." What's the lesson of correct? Shvu lachem po im hachamor. You guys stay here with the Chamor, and I'm going to go on with Yitzhak. We'll be back in a few days. And the Gemara derives from there, and exactly, you just said, Am Hadoyma Lachamor. Who was that was there? It was Yishmael and Eliezer. From there, the Gemara learns that Avram says to him, "You're like the Chamor. An Eved has the status of a Chamor. So you stay here. You stay here. You're not like me. We're gonna part ways at this point."
So Yitzhak actually saw it too.
Yeah.
He saw the Shkina.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what the Medrash says. That
It says, "You see what I see."
Yeah, that's the Medrash. The Medrash says, "Amar li Yitzchak v'ni roeh tamash ani roeh." And Yitzchak says, "Yes." He turns to Eliezer and Tishmael. "Do you guys see it?" They said, "No." He said, "All right, you guys stay here with the donkey, and we're going to continue on." Now, defining Eliezer as a donkey, as a slave, as a doyma l'chamor, has rings of another Gemara. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that says, in Rishonim b'nei Malachim, if the previous, and this is the Gemara talking, if the Rishonim, the previous generations were like Malachim, were like angels, so Anu b'nei Anashim, we, in the times of the Gemara, we're like people. Generation before us, they were like, they're angels. They're angels, we're like people. V'im Rishonim b'nei Anashim, and if you'll say that the ones in the previous generation were only like people, then Anu kachamorim, we're like donkeys. And the Gemara says to contrast what the previous generations were like in comparison to us. They were like Malachim, we're people. But if they're only like people, then we're like donkeys.
Spiritual.
You don't want to know. You don't want to know. So the question is, what are Chazal saying with something like that? Why do they use a language like that? If they want to just say, you know, like we don't compare to them, why do they use such a strong language of it? If they're angels, we're people. If they're people, we're donkeys.
People can transcend above angels.
Maybe this child is, angels are completely spiritual, right? And man half and half, and donkeys strictly physical.
That's exactly right. And therefore what that creates is that there's a fundamental difference between the different layers. In other words, if you say, like in the major leagues, for example, you say this player is horrible, and this player is the best in the league, MVP versus the worst player in the league. So there's a gap between them, but they're both major leaguers. And within the major leagues, you know, you and I on our couches can say, "He's horrible. This stinks. This is what we can be. You know, we can, we'll pull him apart." At the end of the day, you know, the guy's a major leaguer.
I like to say that, you know, a second string quarterback is still the 17th best quarterback in the world.
That's right. Right? So, within their world. But, you know, but if you compare them to us, so like we say, like, "I'm awesome at softball. Like Sunday morning softball, I mean, every at bat, I crush it." So you can't compare that to even like a minor leaguer. Like, what are you talking about? You're talking about like slow pitch synagogue league softball? Like, you're not in the same league. Like, you can't even like, wait, like, what do you mean? I'm hitting 463. Oh, please, give me a break. So the Chazal, like, there's no compare. Like, when we talk about the Rishonim to Anu, there's a time in the Gemara they're saying. The Amorayim in the Gemara are saying, if you want to know what it was like to be a Tana, to be from the preview, the times of the Mishnah, like, we can't even talk to each other. If they're like angels, we're like people. Like, there's no, we're not on the same plane as angels. And if they're like people, we're like animals. You ever think about what it's like to be a cow? Like, what would it be like to be a cow at pasture? You ever think about that?
No.
You know why you never think about that? You can't. The very element, the fact that you can think, disqualifies you from thinking what it's like to be a cow. Because I don't know what it would be like to be a cow, because cows can't think the way we can think. And the very
far side.
What's that?
No, it's like to be a cow from the far side.
From the far side. That's our little insight. But outside of far side.
The Chick-fil-A,
right. Like, I could never think about what it would be like to be a cow, because that would require me not to be able to think. And so my thinking about that disqualifies me. In the same way as I'm disqualified from thinking, what would he like to be an angel? That would be so cool. Same problem. There's no way for me to possibly wrap my mind around what the experience would be like to be an angel, because I'm stuck with my body. And I'm disqualified from ever being able to grasp what that would be like. So it's like fundamentally different. So when Avram says to Eliezer, you're an Eved, you're a slave, you're doyme lechamor, you're like the donkeys, he's establishing such a rift, as saying like, no shaychus, no comparison, we don't connect. Which is what comes out in this week's parsha, when Eliezer is sent off to find a wife for Rivka, and as Rashi quotes, there's a missing vav for a wife for Yitzchak, thank you. And there's a missing vav. He says, "Ulai lo soiveha isha." Maybe the woman's not going to want to come back with me. You're sending me, Avram. I should go out, says Eliezer, to the place where you came from, and I should bring her back. What if she doesn't want to come with me? And Rashi quotes that his intention was, you know, I have a daughter. Maybe she's not going to want to come back. We're going to be stuck. So what am I going to do? How about my? I have a shidduch. I have a daughter. And Avram's response to Eliezer is,
"You're a slave."
Absolutely not. You're a slave. He says, "You're an Eved. You're cursed. My son is Baruch. Son is blessed. Ve'ein Oror nisbore nisdabik b'baruch. Someone who's cursed can't come together with someone who's blessed."
Does Eliezer start out as a slave, or we're saying that he realized that he was destined to be
both? He was destined to be a slave, and chose to be a slave to Avram than to anybody else.
So why make himself a slave? Right? Because all the other, all the other souls that Avraham has created, they weren't slaves, right?
Correct. No, they were just his kirev movement.
Right. So why does he? Like, it seems like his head, his head convert, is the lowest of the low. Why would he
So that's really the question on the table is, here you have this character Eliezer, who Chazal call him an intelligent slave, because he was descended from Ham and from Canaan, and he was going to be a slave. As he said, maybe someone else is going to come and take me, let me at least be a slave to Avram. Then within his being a slave, he achieves the highest of the highs. So that Chazal talk about him, he looked spiritually exactly like Avram. He ruled over everything. He was the one who was drawing the water from the well of Avram's Torah and giving it to everybody else to drink. He ruled over his Yetzer the same way Avram did. And at the same time that they say this is what he achieved, there is this, you're cursed. You're a slave. You'll never be able to marry into my family. You're like the Chamor. You're fundamentally different. Even though he was reached the highest of the high as far as being a student. So at the same time that his greatest student, because I don't talk about this about any of Avraham's students, Eliezer is the greatest student of Avraham, yet was forever a slave. In the sense that he couldn't marry into Avraham's family. Chamor, he's a donkey.
So it wouldn't matter if he had chosen to be a slave or not. He still would have been able to, because this is it also has to be family.
Right.
To be Avraham's family. So it had no.
So the question is why? Why should it be that if you achieve such greatness in Torah, why not?
There was something where he thought he overcame the curse when he asked.
He thought he did?
He thought, forget, there was something where he thought he was no longer cursed, and that's when he proposed his daughter as.
You're saying that you're from.
Elliot, I forget where.
So to me, it would make sense. I would look at what he achieved. Look at what he achieved.
He was something that made him think that he too could break that, break away from.
It's still lacking.
So what?
It's still lacking.
Lacking what?
Lacking inheritance.
It seems like he's lacking it too.
Yeah, but there is no heritage. There is no heritage at this point. I mean, what is Abram's the first?
His family, though.
Yeah, but what does his family have? His father's an idolater.
What about the Medrash that says that Eliezer was owed Malach HaBashel?
I'm not familiar with that Medrash.
You remember
that? Yeah.
He was owed?
Yeah.
Well, big reason
Eliezer being owed?
Big reason Avram sent Eliezer.
It doesn't say that in the Stone Chumash. I'm not sure if that's true.
Oh, yeah, that's
Stone
Chumash. My personal information.
I don't know. I don't know, I'm not familiar with that. I'm not saying it's not true. I don't know anything against that.
Okay, I mean, please, Sarah, if that's the case. Because obviously Og wasn't the Prime Chum.
Isn't Og the one that told Sarah what was happening? By the...
Yes. Well, we know that... I'm trying to say whether or not... I think Chazal say it was a Malach that told her.
I thought it was the Medrash that says that it was Og because he wanted to marry.
No, it was Og. He wanted to marry Sarah.
That was by Polis. Yeah, yeah.
Right, but in fact, when Lavan was taken captive, that was Og. Chazal say that was Og who came to tell Abraham that Lot was taken captive. In the beginning of this week's question, let me just check out the Rashi. Rashi said,
so why did Og do that? What did he gain to benefit?
Og thought that
he wanted Abraham to be killed at war.
Exactly. He killed.
Alright, I'm getting my story
mixed up.
Yeah, let's talk about the woman. Yeah, Rashi just says, the Akedah, that she heard about the Akedah. That's where she heard it from. I think it's from. Yeah, I think it's more from the Malach. It's more from the Malach in this case. So the Sheshiva learns that this is the concept of Avdus. Concept of Avdus, when you're an Eved, and we don't have an Eved in the type of Eved that we're talking about here, an Eved Kanani, the Gemara says, is Gufo Kanoi. It's as if his body, his essence, is acquired by his master. Like, for example, as opposed to an Eved Ivri, when a Jew is sold as a slave, because he stole, he doesn't have enough money, whatever it may be, so Ein Gufo Kanoi, his body isn't acquired by the master, he's acquired for his labor, that I own your...
That
time.
The master acquired himself.
Right, and then I have to treat you so well that the Gemara says it's as if I acquired for myself a master because I think I take better care of you than I can take care of myself. But an Eved Kanani is not like that. Gufa says, if I own you, you don't have your own time, you don't have your own ability to choose what to do. You have to do everything. Everything you want to do comes through me. Even if you'd wanted to do Avodas HaKodesh, you wanted to do something in spirituality, in Ruchnias, it only comes through me if I choose to allow you to do so, when and how. And when a person has no control over their life, then they basically give up almost in their dea, their mind, their ability to be their own person as well. You're not you have no da, so to speak, no mindset. You're not a person because you're controlled completely by someone else.
A parrot? Like a puppet.
Like a puppet. The milo of that, the advantage of that is, if you attach yourself to the right person, to whom do you now take on those characteristics because everything that you have comes through them? If you attach yourself to the right person, you can become a shadow of an Avram Avinu. But because the way that you're becoming like Avram is because you gave up of yourself, you have no self-expression, you can't have any self-expression, so while you can take on the characteristics of your master, but you're really a shell almost. And as a shell, you'll have this dichotomy in which we say, you can achieve this greatness. No student of Avram achieved what he did, because his other students weren't slaves. His other students had to contend with themselves.
But they're not free people? Like you're either a slave or you're not.
There were, that's right. So Avram had this academy of Balei Tshuva.
who were free.
Who were free, and none of whom achieved what Eliezer did. Chazal don't talk about any of them that way, because they have to contend with themselves. And as we all know from our own experiences and learning, like, there's a lot going on as far as doing that. If you remove the self, so Eliezer was just a sinner, just a complete conduit to take in everything that Avraham had to offer. Except that he lost himself in the process because he was an Eved.
Yeah, he got persist on Shon.
He did get, maybe.
So he had to serve all the Shon.
He did have to serve all the Shon.
With Hashem.
Oh, so one second. So when it comes to then to being a slave to another human being, when you give up your freedom to give it to another person, so that's...
You're never going to be worthy?
Utter. That's cursed. That's something that's... Like, you gave up that which you are as a human, and you gave it to another human being and said, you're in control of me?
Like work.
Well, it's much more than work. Work is okay. A slave is different than being in work. And that's why, but the pasuk says at the end of Vayikra, the Torah says, Ki avadai heim, you are my servants, v'lo avadim la'avadim. You can't be a servant to another servant. Another human being is a servant to me, to God. And if you make your servant yourself a servant to him, that's intolerant.
But that's what he was trying to escape.
The problem I have with that is, though, it starts off, Eliezer's premise is, this is who I am. It's not that he made the choice to become a servant to Avram. He's
right.
Saying, I'm going to be a servant anyway.
Exactly.
What you're saying doesn't, I don't know.
So he chose wisely. That's why Chazal say he was a wise slave. Because since he was within that family that was cursed with servitude, who should he become a slave to?
I didn't know you got to pick like your master.
So the way the Chazal say was, it's like we don't have that family, so we don't know what it's like to be that slave. His language was, the way Chazal described it is, I'm susceptible to being taken as a slave. Is it going to be some nomadic tribe that comes along and I'm a slave to them? Or should I throw myself at the feet of an Avraham Avinu and become a slave to him? A slave I'll become.
Was this like just like a known family? As all these people are slaves, if you want to pick them up, they'll just go get them?
So, I don't know. That's a fair question. I don't know how to deal with that kind of question.
He was from...
I don't know how to deal with that question. In other words, in the sense of what it was like in terms of, you know, were B'nai Cham recognizable and they were just... But it's...
The mention says that he had a chutz become Avraham's
descendant? Yes, and that was the opening mention that he was an intelligent slave. He was a slave who said, if I'm going to be a slave, let me be a slave to Avram. And in that successful choice, he became the greatest student Avraham had. Because he was completely subjugated to Avram. Everything that Avram wanted to become, he could become, because he had nothing, he was nothing. And because of that, despite the fact that he became the greatest slave, but he's Arur. He's always going to be cursed. And Avram's like, you can never marry into my family, because a human being has to give himself over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ki Ovadai Heim, you're my Avadim, and that's a challenge. You can't give up yourself to another human being. To give up that the freedom of what it is to be a human, willingly in any sense, and therefore there's no, the Jew can't become that type of slave to another Eved, despite the fact that that's what allowed Eliezer to achieve that which he did achieve. Yet at the same time, he's an R because there's no zich, there's no him, there's no personal element to that because of what being a slave takes away and removes when you totally give yourself up to that. Let me hear your question because I know you have one.
I'm still thinking.
So why would he even insinuate or even allude to, hey, you know, you could maybe marry off the mind?
I forgot his place.
Yeah, so that's what Michael was saying. There's a sense of, look at what I've become. Maybe I can marry my daughter.
I mean, there's the whole point is he chose a path where
only
he'd always be, be lower. What would have happened if he would have said, "Oh, okay, well, maybe now things might be different." He chose the path that everybody else chose, knowing the or assuming, I guess, the.
I don't know if it would be from the fact that we're saying. There is nobody else for him to marry. She won't come back.
Didn't Avraham have this fear that he was going to give everything that Eliezer was going to be his in the previous parsha?
His fear of when Hashem promises everything, he says, "I have nothing because all I have is Eliezer," and that I don't know if you mean in the sense of
who's going to, Eliezer's going to inherit.
All right, and what are his words? Umati tenu, meaning you can't give me anything because what's going to happen to it? It goes to Eliezer. And he didn't say, oh, I guess my line will go through him. It was like, ma titeinli. What are you promising me? Your reward will be great. What do you mean my reward will be great? All I have is this slave Eliezer.
What about his other kid?
So at that point, Yishmael had not been born yet.
Oh.
That was before Yishmael, that story.
Okay.
That story happened with Yishmael. That was before the birth of Yishmael.
I like Yishmael.
Which one is he done? Before Yishmael?
When he said that, what can you give me? Because where is it going to go? I don't have any people to have.
Yeah, the chronology was the war of the four kings and the five kings, Lot's taken. After he recaptures Lot, Hashem comes to him and says, you're going to be a great man, I'm going to give you a great reward. Abram says, what do you mean you're going to? I have nothing. Following that story is the Bris Veda Masara, and then they have this pact, this covenant, and he cuts the animals in half. And then following that story is Sarai, the Torah that says, and Sarai and Avram have been married for all these years, and no children, and Sarai gives Hagar to Avram, and then Yishmael is born, then Yitzhak is born, and Yishmael gets kicked out, and then the Akkad, and then the princess to Chayzar. I mean, it's an interesting character, the Eliezer, the aspect of being, there are some in Joshua that seem to imply, going with what you said, that after he completed his mission, and after Rivka was taken, and after everything was done, that Avram freed him. That his mission as an Eved had now been completed. But before that aspect, that he was completely separate. He couldn't be nistabek with Baruch. He couldn't attach himself to that which is considered Baruch.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.